When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome everyone to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. I'm Austin.
I'm BJ.
And this week we are actually talking about Sandland, because Sandland will be out today, the time this episode is live. Sandland is out, the embargo lifted on Wednesday, and so my review of the game should be live already. If you haven't read it yet, you can head over to Screen Rant and read it. Or you can listen to this episode where I'm going to be giving a spoiler-free rundown of Sandland, my review of it, all that good stuff, kind of like I did when Dragon Quest The Adventure of Dai came out.
Yep. And I'm excited to hear about it because you and I have just talked a little bit, so this is one that I am excited to hear more details about what happens when you further in.
So I should probably preface this though and say that in terms of spoiler free, like I am going to be talking about, like there's going to be some spoilers from the actual manga, which it's like, I mean, it's 25 years old, so I don't feel too bad like talking about some story beats from the manga. I haven't seen the anime yet that is out. And so the game is really more of an adaptation of the manga of the anime than the manga.
Okay.
But yeah, so I haven't had a chance to watch the anime yet, so I'm not sure how much how closely it follows the anime, because I haven't seen it. But it definitely is a adaptation more so of the anime than the manga, because of there's like new characters and new subplots and stuff. Like, this isn't a spoiler because they've shared this in promotional materials like ahead of time, but like Anne, for instance, is a character that you meet early on, and she helps you like customize your vehicles and stays in your party at different times, not the entirety of the game, but for a long time. And she's not in the manga at all. Like, in the manga, it's very much Beelzebub, the demon prince, his little demon friend Thief that he brings along with him, and then Sheriff Rao, the human, the old man. It's the three of them, you know, driving around in a tank. And so this one, you know, obviously there's other vehicles to ride in than just the tank, and also they add Anne. And I thought Anne was a pretty welcome addition overall. Like, sometimes yeah, it can be weird with adaptations when they try to throw in new characters where it's like, this like messes with the flow too much. But I didn't feel that way with Anne at all. Like, I thought it actually kind of strengthened the existing characters already by having her in there. The other new characters, which I won't get into too much here, but the other new characters, I thought like a lot of them felt underwhelming and not quite as wholly developed as the characters that already existed in the manga. And it would be interesting to see it from like your perspective or someone's perspective who like is just playing Sandland for the first time and hasn't read the manga before or anything like that, because for me, I'm like, well, how much of it is because I was already attached to the existing characters from the manga, so it's like my view skewed a little bit where it's like with the other new characters. But like, just in trying to be as objective as possible, like I really thought that it really seemed like the new characters outside of Anne were a little bit on the lukewarm side, I think.
No. Maybe if they do some kind of other, like, property, other media, they'll include them and end up getting the backstories and personalities fleshed out a little bit more.
I think they're all from the anime, so I think that the anime probably does do that.
Oh, gotcha. I was thinking they were brand new for some reason I'd taken that to be brand new for the game itself. I gotcha. No, not just from the manga. I see what you're saying.
I mean, there's some really cool parts in the game, like like while we're talking about story tidbits a little bit, and these aren't spoilers, but like I sent you right before we recorded, where like Thief, like my favorite panel in all of Sandland, like in the entire manga, my favorite panel is it's the panel of Thief in a Santa Claus outfit, and he's like, "This is murder on my hairstyle," and it's hilarious. And they completely do that again in the game. They have the same line. He's in the outfit. You do like a little stealth portion where you're sneaking around as Thief,
right?
In the Santa Claus outfit, and I adored it. That was a really cool thing. I was slightly disappointed because at the beginning, when Rao shows up and tempts Beelzebub by offering video games and the console and all, they don't do the whole, "Ooh, Dragon Quest 13 on the PS6, obviously because of trademark reasons.
Yeah. I mean,
this is a Bandai Namco game, and, you know, Dragon Quest is owned by other studios, and PlayStation 6 would be a Sony trademark. So I get why they couldn't do that, but I was kind of slightly disappointed at the beginning of the game whenever he's just like, "Ooh, a video game console with games." And I was like, "That's Dragon Quest 13 on the PS6. Yeah.
Which I do love, that I've still always loved that's going to be like probably a real thing. And in the future, it's going to be like, "Wow, that was really prescient and really well timed out." So I think that's neat. I really, really, really hope that Dragon Quest 13 is on the PS6.
I mean, it's looking more and more likely by the day that will be the case. So we'll find out. As someone who really liked the manga, like, I feel like this was a really good adaptation. Like, I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. I felt like it was a really good adaptation where I looked at it as like a revised and expanded edition, basically. That's what I kind of looked at it as. Like, if this weren't a game, if there weren't an anime, if this was just like a manga, like, it would be like, you would see like the revised and expanded edition, you know, like stamp on the cover of the book. Like, that's what it felt like, where it was a really good adaptation. The, like, the spirit, the humor, like all of that stuff from the manga, like, they did an excellent job of just recapturing all of that. But also they, like, you know, went a little deeper with some of the subplots. They went a little broader with some of the world building and things like that. They dropped in the new characters and everything, and it just really added to it. Whereas, like the Die game, right? Like, that was just, my biggest complaint was that it was just like, so much of it was just rewatching stills and voiceover from the anime. So it just felt like, it did not feel distinct. It didn't feel like I was getting a game out of it. It felt like, okay, this is just a rewatch of the anime. And so this is kind of like the, if Die is the wrong way to do a video game adaptation, Sandland is like the right way to do it. Like, this is, should have put that in my review. That's a good quote. But like,
that's true. You can edit
like
it.
It is really like the way I feel about it. Like, it's, you kind of have to go, it's almost like to kind of put it in another medium here. It's like, okay, like the Last of Us TV show, right? Like, that was a good adaptation, but it was like, it didn't connect with me too much because it followed, that game is already so cinematic that it was just like rewatching really a lot of the story beats from the game. And yeah, they expanded on it a little bit, and you know, I really liked most of those expansions, and I liked the show fine, but like, I much prefer Fallout right now. And it's not just because of the sense of humor and I like Fallout games better, but it's like, it's Fallout, it's like, it's an adaptation of the series, but it's like new, you know? And that's kind of what this felt like, where it was like, yeah, you get to see some of these moments, and it's kind of like hearing like songs from Fallout, you know, on the show, where you like do the Leonardo DiCaprio, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood pointing gif, you know?
Yeah,
where it's like you do that while you're playing the game, just like you do that when you're watching the Fallout show, but like, it feels distinct and different enough that you feel like you're getting a truly like different experience.
Yeah, and I loved the Last of Us show, but I also hadn't played through like all of the game. I just watched you play a bunch of it, and so I didn't like have the anywhere near the connection that a lot of people did to it. But I really enjoyed it. And so for the same thing, you know, I love Fallout. Like, I finished it and I'm watching it again right now with my wife. And so I love, because of the exact same reasons that you said, that I think it's a fantastic adaptation. So yeah, I mean, I like that the Sandlan game kind of takes that approach, that to the manga, yeah, at least.
And I mean, I know I spoke on this a while back when I was talking about playing through the demo, but it's like the art style, just like, I cannot explain enough how much I love the art style. Like, ILCA, which did DQ11 and like One Piece Odyssey for Bandai Namco recently, but they did Dragon Quest 11, they did Dragon Quest Treasures. I'm almost confident that they did the Dark Prince as well. They've done some Pokemon games, but anyway, they did this, and I, like, honestly, everyone there deserves a raise because they did just such a fantastic job. Like, it looks like Toriyama illustrations. Like, it wasn't like DQ11 looks like Toriyama, but like, you know, it, everything, and like some of the Dragon Ball video games, like it's clearly there, but like they smooth out everything, and like Sandland leaves in the hardened edges and what looks like the pencil lines and stuff like that, where it really looks like illustrations. And it's just, it's really right. Fantastic. It's kind of like, it's about like, you know, the original X-Men TV show where like the final season, they cut the budget. So they did like the weird, like everybody had rounded faces and looked more like animated cartoons as opposed to like earlier seasons that looked like comic book, like Jim Lee comic book illustrations come to life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, where Sandland is like it really does look like these manga panels that are like bright and vibrant and colorful are like moving and coming to life. And I mean, Sandland might have one of my favorite art styles ever. Like, I just adore it. The way that they've made it look. I mean, I'm a sucker for cel shaded graphics already, but just having the cel shaded graphics and keeping those like edges and the pencil lines and everything in there and the shading the way that they've done, just like, it's spectacular. Like, I mean, I really do. I completely adore the art style so much.
Yeah, I mean, the art style, when I first saw the videos for this, that's exactly what I thought. That it was like, this doesn't look like an anime. This looks like it is a moving comic book. It doesn't just look like a cartoon. And I think that to make it look like a drawn, make a video game look like a drawn medium while still looking like an actual game is a very hard thing to do, and they really succeeded at this.
Yeah. And yeah, for sure. And I just like getting into like some of the gameplay elements and everything for people who are curious about that. Like, obviously, vehicle combat is the big selling point. Like, this is where most of the promotional materials are really leaning into the vehicle combat. Yep. And it's fun. I mean, you get multiple vehicles. There's like blueprints. There's a lot of customization. You unlock like a dye shop and can dye it whatever colors you want. You get extra parts. You have to upgrade all this stuff. I mean, it's pretty deep. You sometimes have to swap vehicles depending on what kind of obstacle in the world is in front of you. But also you kind of have to think about, like, in terms of combat, like, what's going to work best. Like, early game example, because I'm trying to avoid spoilers, is like, once you get the jump bot, like, you have to use that jump bot to get across like gaps in bridges or to climb up mountainsides and things like that. You can't do that with your tank, but like, I found overall the jump bot to be a very much less effective vehicle to use in combat, so I would much prefer using the tank for that. And like, you have to use the tank to blow up, there's like certain walls that you can explode through that the jump bot initially, like, you can't explode through it. And so there's like some strategizing that goes around, and it very much does feel like it's not full-blown Twisted Metal. It's not like quite as chaotic. Like, when I think of Twisted Metal, I think of like really chaotic kind of like cars going boom.
And
so this isn't quite that as chaotic as Twisted Metal. It's kind of like Twisted Metal light, and you're in the desert. And if you did like the dune buggy stuff in Jak 3, it kind of feels like that. really liked it. The character combat is where I was kind of underwhelmed overall. It's pretty basic. Like, you get, anytime you're having to fight as Beelzebub, you know, you like get a basic attack, which is like square. You get a strong attack you can do, which is circle. And then you unlock abilities that you can do through like a bar. And then, like, let's say you bring that up and then press circle or whatever to do a more powerful move through like dark powers. And so those are pretty cool, but like you have to get your bar up high enough to be able to unleash one of those. And like Rao and Thief both get abilities you can unlock that can help you in vehicle combat, but also like when you're doing character combat. Like, Thief's abilities can be good because they're like, oh, it increases the drop rate of materials, which you'll need for crafting. But like a lot of Rao's abilities, I just was never quite sold on. Like, you know, Rao takes command of a vehicle, Rao throws out poison gas. Like, it didn't feel like any of the abilities made enough difference to me using those.
Oh yeah.
Where it was just kind of like, it was fine action combat, but it felt very, it felt like it definitely took a backseat to the vehicle, pun intended. And which I understand, but I would have liked to have seen the character combat be a little bit more engaging than what it was overall. But it, I mean, it was still fine. I mean, it gets the job done. It's adequate action combat.
Which, adequate action combat when it comes to vehicles is something that lots of games can't do. That they end up failing at it. Vehicle mechanics and controls can be really janky. And so to hear that it's adequate is actually pretty impressive. That they got it at least enjoyable, because so many times I can't wait for the vehicle parts to be over because it just doesn't click with me. And so I'm really glad that this one does click.
Yeah. There's also another big part of the game is Spino, which is a town that you get to pretty early on. And then you can do side quests and characters will go to Spino. And a lot of times when they go there, it'll mean a shop unlocks and the town slowly gets bigger and better and nicer and you unlock more things. And it runs through the entirety of it. It's very reminiscent of Ni No Kuni 2's town building mechanic, you know, where you go through and you can do side quests and send characters there. It's not as deep as Ni No Kuni's. Like, you would like this one a lot better because I know you didn't like Ni No Kuni 2's, even though I loved it.
Most of actually why I hated Ni No Kuni 2's is because they put it and it was such a lockout that you had to go grind and do every side quest at this at a couple of points in order to move on with the story. Like, you couldn't just do the minimum and go, it was like, no, you're going to flesh this out whether you want to or not. And I thought that was was kind of poopy.
And I don't think this one does. It might, but also I don't know, because I played this game the way I play all games, which means I was running around, and anytime a side quest showed up on the map, I was like, I have to go to there. And I would, you know, go over there and get that one done as quickly as I could. But it reminded me a bit of Ni No Kuni 2 and also Ever Oasis, because, I mean, you're in a desert and you're building out like a town in the desert, where you unlock different crafting things and you go back, and at certain points you do quests for the town, and then once you get that quest done, the town is bigger and better, stuff like that, where it was, I liked it. I mean, I like those kind of things in games generally.
Yeah.
And so I found that to be a very fun part of it, and also like a time sink. Like, there's a ton of stuff to do. I mean, that's where you can go talk to Anne and customize and upgrade vehicles in your garage. It's where you get different item shops, including like furnishings. You get your own room and you can add additions to your room, like your house. And
man, I'm such a sucker for that.
Yeah, you can craft stuff to put in your house, and it's just like all of that stuff was like the more relaxing kind of like life sim stuff,
right,
was a big win for me, and I really enjoyed all of that. There's side quests, you know, some relate to Spino, some don't. And then there's also bounty hunts that you can unlock. You go to a town, talk to an NPC, you go out, fight the hunt, and then come back and get your reward, which I always like that kind of stuff in games. I thought that was fun. There's treasure maps that you can get, and then you follow the maps to go get your treasure, because there's actually I can't remember what they're called, but there's basically mini medals in this game that you collect. Huh. And there's an NPC named Lissy, maybe it was his name. Anyway, he's a cat. He looks just like a Mog, like from Dragon Quest. You know how you typically you would like go give like your, you know, like in DQ Swords, you go and give your mini medals to like the cat Mog NPC. It's very much like that. Like it was, I was like, oh hey, this feels like Dragon Quest.
Nice.
Yeah, and so you can go do that and get maps and different things from the Catman. And so there's lots of like secondary things to do in this game where even though the story is short, like I would say if you just want to stick to the story, you can probably beat this game in like 15 hours, I would say. I mean, it's not a lengthy game. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one thing I appreciate about it is like it's an open world game that like isn't 100 hours. Like it's kind of like it kind of proves that like you can have an open world game, a good open world game that's fun and enjoyable, but it doesn't have to be a 100-hour time sink.
Where it doesn't feel really tedious by the end of it. That's been my experience with almost every open world game I've played, that by the end of it, I was ready to be done, and I just couldn't be. And so open world games are not my absolute favorite. Like, I don't mind them when I play one that's done well, but they are not what I want my go-to to be. I know we talked about this in the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth episode, but having it where it's an open world, but then there's also, you know, a linear progression path that you can end the game and still feel that sense of completion and exploration, think is a fantastic idea.
Yeah. I mean, there's grottos, there's hills that have treasure and stuff and different things, materials up top from time to time. There's radio towers, which you go around and you repair radio towers. There's actually a trophy for repairing, I think it's all the radio towers. I can't decide if I want to platinum this one or not. Like right now I'm still having enough fun that I'm trying to like 100% stuff.
And go around,
but some of the trophies I'm like, I don't know, that seems like a pretty massive time sink, so I'll just...
Is it worse than Ratchet & Clank PS4? Because you texted me about getting the platinum on it, and I abandoned it because it was so grindy. Is this one worse than that one? Because that one's pretty bad, and if this one's not as bad, it's probably alright.
I would say Sandland's probably not as bad because like Ratchet & Clank requires you to replay the entire game in challenge mode. And you have to grind up Ratchet's level completely and like all the weapon levels completely and like Omega weapons and everything, which is really the parts that got to me. Like I didn't mind replaying through the game cause I enjoyed the game, but it was really trying to get Ratchet and the weapons grinded up to top level that just was like felt overly grindy. Based on the trophy list that I've seen and like playing the game myself, I don't think Sandland is quite that bad. It's more just like, maybe tied to difficulty. Like some of them are vague, you know, like it's like unlock many of these things, but it doesn't tell you how many qualifies as many. So I'm like, how many do I have to do to get this to pop? Whereas some
That's
of
fair.
Them,
yeah, many,
some of them will say like unlock multiple. And then you look at it and multiple is like 28 and it's like it actually tells you inside the trophy details. So it's like, okay, yeah. But some of them don't tell you like a number. And so it's just kind of like going blind there.
Maybe that's something that'll be fixed at release because you played, you know, the review copy and it's out today. Maybe that's something that'll be patched in as a fix at some point.
Yeah.
It's just a minor. We'll show the number of this now. We missed it.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. And then two, like Power Picks or some of those sites that do like the trophy guides and roadmaps, like somebody will figure it out and post like you're required to do 60 of these for the trophy to pop. So it'll get done. It's kind of just an issue right now. But yeah, I mean, there's just like the world. Okay, so it's called Sandland. I get it. And so, but sometimes I did get a little sick of the sand. It's like so much of the game is just sand and mountains. And yes, there's like, you know, the forest area, which they've already shown in promos, so that's not a spoiler. And you know, parts that you get to in the manga anyway that are different, that add variety, but on the whole, you're playing in just this very big, vast desert where there's a lot of dunes and some mesas and some canyons, but a lot of it looks kind of samey. And so, like, that part did kind of get to me a little bit, where, I mean, I get it. It's Sandland. You can't have a lot of variety the way you can in some open world games. But, like, just personally, I was like, that kind of gets to you after a while, where you get, like, desert fever or something, where it's like,
I mean,
I've packed this mesa before.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't diverse biosphere land. This is Sandland. So, I mean, you can expect it. But there are ways to do things like that where games have a singular, like, aesthetic environment that are lively and varied. And I hate that this one didn't, where you got desert fever. Because I Am Setsuna ended up doing that, where it was so much snow, and it just looked like so much snow all the time, where it got very trudging in terms of the environment.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's not, don't get me wrong, like, I didn't fault Sandland because of that. Like, I didn't knock it in my review, like, points in my review because of it being samey. I mean, I knew it was Sandland.
Yeah.
I knew what I was getting into. Just, like, on a personal level, I felt like Anakin Skywalker, where I was just very tired of sand.
But did you murder a bunch of children and other denizens of the desert because of that?
No, but I did shoot a lot of dinosaurs, which I kind of felt bad about, honestly, because my kids love playing Paleo Pines, which is like basically Animal Crossing, but like with dinosaurs. And you know, the dinosaurs look cute and cartoony here. You can actually ride the blue raptors in Sandland even. So the implication there is that these creatures can be tamed. But then, you know, you're just going around and, like, blasting pterodactyls out of the sky and, like, killing, like, raptors and things. And I did feel a little bad about it. And the kids, you know, they watch me play Sandland a lot and everything.
Right.
And they're like, can you ride these? As I'm just, like, you know, mass murdering pterodactyls with my tank.
And
I'm
you're
like, no, you can't.
Yes, I could.
But, yeah.
I could, but I'm not.
So, like, I don't think you can ride the pterodactyls, but I know you can ride the little blue raptors that, like, sit outside of towns and stuff.
Right.
If you
That's
want
really
to.
Cool.
But, yeah, like, it was just, I mean, Sandland overall, like, it was a ton of fun, and it had way more content than I honestly expected, because, like, the download on my PS5, I think, was, like, 15 gigs. Or something, anyway.
Which is really small for a game these days that's an open world, like, open-ended, like, full RPG. Like, that's relatively small compared to a lot of games these days.
It was the only other game that I'd played that was that small was Die, actually. And I think Die was actually about 2 gigs bigger, but somehow had way, way less content. I guess all of Die's gigs were probably just, like, anime cutscenes.
Yeah, I mean, maybe just high-res video taking up that much rather than actual game assets.
Yeah, because I was surprised that Sandland's download was that small. Like, because I was really looking forward to this game, and then whenever I was downloading it to start my review, I was like, this does not bode well. Like, this kind of small file size, typically for a game that's supposed to be an RPG of this scale, like, that could be bad. But, you know, it looked good on PS5. I didn't run into any bugs or anything the entire time I was playing it.
Nice.
I know today, the day we're actually recording it, not the day this episode is live, that they did, like, a patch already for the game that said bug fixes on it.
Nice.
So I assume there are some things that, you know, they have fixed already, but I didn't run into any kind of glitches or anything like that. Like, performance was all solid on my playthrough of PS5. And I mean, I've done a lot of stuff in it, you know, like, I didn't just barrel through the story. Like, I really like the side content, so I've done a lot of it so far and will continue doing a lot of it, I'm sure. But yeah, overall, Sandland is a good game. I encourage you and anybody listening to definitely check it out. If you're a big Toriyama fan, definitely check it out. It's hard for me to say if you're a Dragon Quest fan, because, like, gameplay elements to it do not feel like Dragon Quest. I mean, this is a vehicle action RPG, and the gameplay is very different. It doesn't necessarily feel like Dragon Quest. It actually feels more like, It actually feels more like Ratchet and Clank, if I'm being honest. You know, there's shooting. Wow. I mean, you're in a tank instead of using Ratchet to shoot stuff. But there's like, there's a lot of platforming. There's even side-scrolling. There's like multiple times in the game that it goes to a side-scrolling perspective, and you have to like jump over boulders or like hop across at certain points to get bonus treasure and stuff like that, even outside of the story. There's side-scrolling stuff. There's stealth segments where you go around, and I hate stealth segments, but I found these to be pretty much doable and enjoyable. Like, I never felt like they were overly difficult or anything like that.
Yeah.
And like, I was impressed by the amount of, like, it really did feel to me like a PS2 platformer, and I mean that as the highest compliment I could just about give a game. Like, I know some people are like, oh, it feels like a PS2 game, as like a dig against it, but I mean that in the best way possible. Like, Jak and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank, you know, if you grew up playing those kind of games, or even an adult who played those games back in the day, felt like that a lot of times when I was playing Sandland, more so than I felt like playing Dragon Quest or anything like that. So
yeah. So with that in mind, and you know, it being a worthwhile game, let's talk about the price point. Uh-huh. What is it at launch? Is it a $59 game? Or when it's launching, is it a full price $59.95 game?
It's $59.99. Yeah, it's $60. So it's not a $70 PS5 game. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of hard because, like, you were asking me about it, and I was like, yeah, I think this is, like, before we were recording. But I don't know. Like, it's hard to say, because, I mean, it is fun. Like, if I spent $60 on this, I mean, the story's short, but if I spent $60, I don't think I would feel short-changed by this game.
Okay.
At all.
I mean, that...
Yeah.
I think a lot of the price points like that are a subjective value, like perception of value. And, I mean, I know a lot of us put different levels of quality that we expect from a game we pay $20 for versus a game that we pay $60 for. So to hear, you know, that this game, while it's absolutely, you know, not perfect by any means, it's actually worth the $60 is really high praise these days, because there have honestly been very few games that I've bought that I feel are worth what I paid for them at full price. You know, Final Fantasy Rebirth, I honestly wish I hadn't paid it, but I'm really glad that I did, because I got the extra stuff. But like, in terms of what I got out, I did not get my money's worth out of it. I did not enjoy it enough. Where like, I would not have gotten that out of Die when it came out if I'd bought it at full price. I'm actually waiting to get it for about $15 when it goes on sale, which actually it might be about $15 now because it tanked, but it's get the PS5 version for like $10 to $15 when it goes on deep sale. But this one, to hear that it's actually worth buying at full price instead of waiting, is actually really cool to hear. Like, that's something that I actually didn't expect out of this game.
Yeah,
I expected this to be when it gets to 39, yeah, that's really where it is. But to have it actually pushed up into that next tier at a full price game, full price, like AAA price game, for, you know, what is, you know, a single A, double A, I don't even know the rating, like ranking, stuff like that. It's definitely mid-range game, I think, is fantastic.
Yeah, Sandland would be AAA. I mean, it's Bandai Namco, but yeah, I should say though, like, I have a hard time spending more than like $40 for a video game is about where I land. Like, I don't buy too many $70 games, because I would rather wait a few months and get them when they're cheaper. And the few times I could count on one hand the time I've paid $70 for a new game right now. And of those times, the only time I can really think of that I didn't regret it was Final Fantasy 16, which I fell in love with and, you know, platinum and sunk a lot of time into. Like, that one, it was like, I really enjoyed it right out the gate. I was, you know, from the demo, I was already invested in the story and all of that. But pretty much the other times, again, that's also skewed because, you know, I get games like this to review, and so it's like I didn't have to pay for them, so it's kind of hard. But like, this one, just if beforehand, before I knew I was going to review it or anything like that, like, I was thinking, oh, this is a game that, you know, it's probably like $40. This is a game I'll buy when it's $40. But it really does. Yeah, if I'd paid $60 for it, as much fun as I had, as much as there's still to do in it, and that I'm still having fun with, like, I wouldn't feel shortchanged at all by paying that amount for it. So yeah. Everybody can kind of take that how they will.
Yeah, I think that's very high praise, because I know you don't pay a whole lot of that, neither do I. And so it's really good to hear about that, because like I'll buy almost any game if it's $6.99 to $8.99. I mean, a lot of people do that, but for one to be like $59.99, I have to actually really, really want to play it right then. And so, like I said, it's really good to hear that this is one of those games, because it really could have gone either way. Especially when you look at the download size compared to something like Infinity Strash, where it's like, oh, no. But I think it's cool. I think that's really good. Like, that makes me happy and hopeful for how well this game will do.
Yeah.
So hopefully the reviews will show that as well. I mean, I know yours does, but hopefully the others will as well.
That's what I was going to say, is it's still early day of embargo lifting, so I don't know how reviews are going to go, but I feel like this is probably a game that will get middling review scores, just because I know how reviews tend to go overall. Right. I could be wrong and everything, but I don't know. I've had fun with it. I think other people will have fun with it. I think people who like Sandland will like the game. And I think people who, even if you've never played Sandland, if you're in the mood for that kind of like action platformer kind of RPG, mm-hmm. like I think you'll really enjoy it. And it's chill, it's laid back, it's got a really great sense of humor. The art style is amazing. I mean, I really have liked this one. The only reason people listening will be like, oh, well, if you loved it so much, why did you give it 4 out of 5? The only reason, first of all, there are very few games that I would ever give a full-blown 5 out of 5 for. Like, a perfect score game, like is not, maybe I'm just stingy, but I don't give a whole lot of games a 5 out of 5. Like, there's very, very few games I would ever do that with. But the main problem with it is that Sandland is a good game that always just feels like it's on the cusp of being great, but never is, if that makes sense. Like, there's something about it.
It does.
There's something about it that just doesn't feel like it's not going to be a game that people are still talking about like 3 years from now. If that makes sense. Like, it's not going to be a Dragon Quest XI or an Elden Ring or, you know, a Red Dead Redemption 2 or, like, you know, those kind of games that get a lot of, like, 5 out of 5 scores where people are still talking about it. Like, it's not going to be one of those games, but it's a game that you pay the price of admission for and you have a really good time with it. And so I would call it a very good game, which I feel like that's a 4 out of 5 would be what I would consider to be a very good game.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair at all.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the reasoning for that. But people who are on the fence about it, I mean, there's a free demo to play, so check out the demo. You don't have to take my word for it. Try it out. I think the demo, after playing the game now, I'm not quite sure the demo really does a very good job of selling you on the game, because the demo is just, there's not really much story beats, and it's pretty much just letting you get a feel for the vehicle combat. So I'm not sure it quite does a great job of selling you on all the stuff that I fell in love with, like all the side content and everything, or much on the story at all, but it does at least show you the vehicle combat, which is probably the majority of where you're going to be when you're playing the game, through exploration and battles and everything. Yep. So definitely check it out if you're even halfway interested in Sandland. I know we're running a little over here, but I was going to do the Dragon Quest FM bingo thing. So consider that a tease for next week. We had a listener send us a Dragon Quest FM bingo card that was really funny. I wanted to read that on air. So we'll do that next week since we're running over here. But for you and everybody else, check out Sandland, because I think it's a really good game.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great. I'm really glad to hear all that stuff about it. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, so. it's really good.
Yeah.
Just go beat DQ6 first.
I will.
But anyway, thank you guys for listening to this week's episode. Remember, you can chat with us on Blue Sky or Twitter at Dragon Quest FM, and you can chat with me personally on both of those places at Dragon Questin.
And I'm on Twitter as Professor Beej. I'm on Threads and Instagram as bjk.games. And remember, we do have a Patreon at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM if you would like to support the podcast.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye, y'all.